This is Melissa, and today is the 15th of September, 2024. I hope that everyone is doing well. I had a nice break from the heat. We had temperatures that were about 25 degrees lower, cool nights and days in the 70s, really ideal weather. And that's over. The temperatures shot up again yesterday, and we're going to be in the high to mid 90s. For another week or two. So hot. This week, I was in the Telegram book club chat. Darren and I just yesterday did a talk on chapter 12, and I was spending a little bit of time just checking in and seeing what was going on. And it was about a week ago that there was a conversation on the channel about who is in charge, who is at the top. And there was some speculation, and I had said something about don't go down certain rabbit holes that probably sounded, you know, it's just, oh, don't do that. And so a couple of people asked for further elaboration, and I just did a topic search where Alan was talking about ancient families, you know, who's at the top? Who's running this show? And I sent the group back three different talks and said, you know, I haven't had a chance to listen to these lately, but these are keyword searches, what Alan is talking about, who's in control. And someone in the group, Stuart, just kindly took it upon himself to clean up the audio on these two Sweet Liberty talks that I had mentioned. And when I heard the quality, it was much better than normal. He'd run it through some filters and it sounded good. And I thought, why not use one of those? So there was a nice synchronicity all of the way around, because I've got the listener supplied signs and symbols. And I said, oh, okay, so on Saturday, I'm going to put up the beehive. And then as I was listening to this talk that Alan Watt did with Jackie Petru on Sweet Liberty, August 30, 2004, he was telling her about the beehive. I like that kind of synchronicity. And it's not too woo-woo. I'm not getting woo. But when you are able to have conversations with and interact with people that are, if not like-minded, there's a lot of meeting of the mind that goes on, you get these synchronicities more often. And it is a good thing. So in this talk, Jackie opened it up with a spiritual message. Our spiritual message this evening, she said, is from Ephesians 6, beginning with verse 10. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. And she goes on to read the rest of this quote, which you may all be familiar with by now, because one thing that I noticed at the beginning of the year of the sea, wasn't there a song, The Year of the Cat? It's not that sea. It's a different sea. That a lot of people talking about what was going on, trying to understand it, medical freedom, we're quoting this a lot. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. So I heard that a lot on a lot of different talks. Because there was something happening then that was real. And then there was something happening that was being taken advantage of. What was real is that this operation took a lot of people by surprise. There were a lot of people who had no idea what was happening and why. And some had their senses heightened and they said, okay, this isn't good, this isn't right, let me do some homework and figure it out. And there were people who could understand parts of it, but couldn't wrap their heads around what seemed to be evil, what seemed to be planning, what seemed to be incredible coordination. And that drove a lot of people to seek otherworldly explanations. And if not otherworldly explanations, otherworldly comfort. The beauty of where Alan goes when Jackie said, "What does that passage there say to you, Alan?" The beauty was where he took it and where the conversation ended up going. He had a different interpretation than you would find if you went to a Bible scholar or looked online at what does Ephesians 6:10 mean. Very different explanation. And throughout in this conversation with Jackie, as they touched on control over the world, an ancient system of control, ancient families, who are they? And the religions that are used throughout time and created, Alan said, his take on things is very, very different from anyone out there. And I say that emphatically because he never went for the explanations that we can get anywhere else. He had just gone beyond that. He'd seen it from a different perspective. Sometimes, if I didn't know better, if I didn't know Alan's history, I would think that he had gone on a mystery school tour of 2.5 decades, you know, India, Greece, Egypt. Because how else do you get all of this knowledge? That, though, was what was really on my mind in picking this, is that the year of the sea, as I mentioned last week, brought out a lot of talking heads and a lot of expertise in certain fields, but what they were missing was that depth and breadth of knowledge. And when they take their field of expertise, that's fine. So they're a geneticist or a cardiologist or an oncologist or an attorney, etc., etc. That's their expertise. But in getting in trying to get up to speed, so many of the talking heads that we were presented with, in seeking for an explanation of what was happening and why, broadened their focus faster than they could bring clarity to the picture. And that is when out there became chaotic to me, looking and listening, watching and reading. Because you've got someone who is confident in their expertise becoming a generalist of a big picture with a lot of historical context, and there are huge gaping holes. In those gaping holes of what isn't known but is speculated or offered as an explanation quickly because, again, the knowledge base isn't there, there's lots of room for these otherworldly explanations. So I'm talking spirituality and religion, which is fine. It all has a place, but let's know what that place is and where it came from in the first place. In this talk, Alan and Jackie got into Alice Bailey, very interesting, and the ABs, that's interesting, and Foster Bailey, and a book that Foster Bailey wrote called Things to Come, published by the Lucis Trust. There was some speculation there in between Alan and Jackie, and Jackie saying, you said that Foster is Bailey, is Alice Bailey's brother. And the whole back and forth kind of made me smile, because we're now in a time when I'm talking to someone and I'll just start typing away on the computer. You've all heard me typing. But like, well, what was that relationship? Gotta know. And they didn't do that. You know, 20 years ago, they actually could keep the train of thought, listen to each other, and not run off to the internet to try to find validation for whatever it was they were talking about. But as it turns out, Foster Bailey was not Alice Bailey's brother. It was her second husband. And they were both involved in the offshoot of Theosophy. They got dissatisfied with Theosophy. You can look all this up and find it out, because that's not why I raised the point. What they were talking about here was the role of Freemasonry, Alice Bailey, the role of these societies in bringing us new beliefs for a new age. The New Age, and remember how far back the New Age goes, this old publication. But in taking a glance at Alice Bailey and what she and her husband were doing, yes, they were very involved in the United Nations, and they came up with something that, a type of meditation called triangles, and this is still on the go. You can look up lucistrust.org and see the triangles. A planetary network of light and goodwill. And you can find a triangle's partner and register your triangle and join all the triangles together. So what this is it's a kind of meditation. Service through the power of thought. Triangles is a service activity using the power of thought and prayer to uplift and transform consciousness. Three people form a triangle. Three people agree to link in thought each day using the Great Invocation, a world prayer. They visualize energies of light and goodwill circulating through the three focal points of their triangle and pouring out through the network of triangles surrounding the planet. Participants imagine the hearts and minds of the human family being irradiated with light and goodwill, strengthening all that is good and true and of beauty in the world. Doesn't that sound nice? It sounds so nice. So then you go to Baha'i. Baha'i is a religion founded in the 19th century. It also has connections to the United Nations. And this is one that actually Darren in South Africa has followed more closely. We've touched on this before, and I think maybe in the future Darren and I can have a chat about this. But Baha'i is headquartered in Israel, I believe. It's called a persecuted religion, but it is all of the unity ideas. So unity of God, unity of religion, unity of humanity. Baha'i's belief that God periodically reveals his will through divine messengers whose purpose is to transform the character of humankind and to develop within those who respond moral and spiritual qualities. I think what I'm talking about is an idea that I had a couple of years ago, and not sure wrote something about this in June of 2022 called Conspirituality. Now, Conspirituality is a thing, and you can look it up and find it. It's had some peer-reviewed papers done on it, but I'll start with what Wiki has to say about conspirituality. This is describing the overlap of conspiracy theories with spirituality, typically of New Age varieties. Contemporary conspirituality became common in the 1990s. and they go on to talk about it. There is a Gnostic quality to this, in that they're in the know. That's how I mean the use of the word Gnostic. So we're in the know. We know about a conspiracy that no one else knows about, and we know truths that no one else knows about. This is the idea. What you have in this very large world, then, is the possibility to have all kinds of ideas, all kinds of conspiracies come together with all kinds of beliefs and universal feel-good movements. This piece in Wiki goes on to cite the Zeitgeist movement. Now, I remember the film Zeitgeist came out way back when, 2007, 2008, but it really took hold. Interesting to me is that the Zeitgeist film exposed a lot of the things that Alan Watt exposed, but it put that little misdirect in there, and the misdirect is utopia is possible, and here's how we do it, here's how we create this movement. This Wiki piece goes on to talk about what they call far-right conspiracy theories, such as QAnon, and then they talk about the Year of the Sea conspiracy theories. So the trouble with being in the conspiracy theory camp, or willingly calling yourself a conspiracy theorist, is that you may well have the gnosis, but once you go over into that camp, then you're associating with people who don't have the gnosis but think they do. And then you can get into a place that is not productive, where you're looking at everyone and going, oh, you've got it all wrong, etc., etc. And I say it's not productive because the people who go into this world are genuine seekers of explanations, knowledge, and perhaps even truth. They really want to know what's going on. But believe me, this world has been set up and placed here in every aspect to make sure that there is a rabbit hole just for you. I'm talking about all of it. You know, Alan has talked about Madame Blavatsky and Annie Besant and Alice Bailey and the ABs, and the appeal of this kind of New Age thinking, the mix of Eastern practices with Western beliefs. The appeal is strong, especially for women, but now it has been normalized into Western culture. So I've said this before, it really is everywhere. And the idea, when conspirituality first began to be, you know, that when the neologism appeared and people were talking about it, it was kind of an academic way of looking down your nose at people who would be so ridiculous as to fall for that, whatever that is. There are players who come out into this world, like I say, that are given to us, that have perhaps made a living on mixing facts with the fantastical. So you might just find a book called Infinite Love is the Only Truth, Everything Else is Illusion. Well, infinite love sounds good, doesn't it? But there are a lot of places to get lost in the everything else is illusion world. I've seen some of the biggest names in the so-called patriot or alternate movement say things like the government is using DMT to talk to aliens, or aliens are directing the course of the world by beaming down their directions into the minds of people like Klaus Schwab, etc. I heard one person make that claim, but to say that, you know, it's okay, never fear, because he was receiving direct transmissions from God on how to counter this. But it isn't just the laughable. It isn't just the transparently callous way in which people's fears and search for something beyond themselves is taken advantage of. It's across the board. One thing that I saw a lot of was medical freedom conferences and symposiums. I even, a listener sent me a free ticket to go to one of those a couple of years ago, and it was quite educational. This is one called the Conscious Life Expo. This was in Los Angeles. Where else? The Medical Freedom Symposium of 2024, Monday, February 12th, 2024. And what is the picture that advertises medical freedom? It is a graphic of someone in the lotus position, meditating with the staff and the two serpents meeting at their throat chakra, and all of the chakras going up to the crown. There you go. That's medical freedom. We're just going to vibrate our way out of this. And it has some of the huge names in the medical freedom that we all know them. We all heard them. And this is conspirituality. Because the mainstream who is looking at this is saying, oh, what do you mean there was something wrong with the official narrative of Operation C? What do you mean there's something suspicious and scary about the V? You know, you're just a lunatic fringe, that's you. And then it is mixed in with, you know, just vibrating at a higher level and, you know, getting in the right position and saying your om. That's it. That's it. Unfortunately, it's not like the mainstream religions have a counter to this. In fact, they seem to have sent out as many emissaries, or there are emissaries just using the name, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a born again, I'm an evangelical, I'm an Orthodox, I'm a Catholic, you know, but speaking for freedom, free speech, and all, they've got all of the conspiracy talk down. They know the players. And it's interesting how much truth Alan provided us all for many, many years. This talk from 2004, just full of deep insights and amazing things. So much of his work has been repurposed for another purpose. So, anyway, that's it. I'm going to put up a few things. They mentioned the meditation room at the United Nations. I'll put up a link or two to that, to the Baha'i. And I think what I'm really saying is the beauty of Alan, well, it was much beauty, much there to be appreciative of. But he was always cautioning us to think for ourselves and be individuals. The individual path is lonely, I'll grant you that. And that is why sometimes I like to think about and even dwell on the little synchronicities that happen amongst like-minded people. When you're talking about something and someone says, oh, that was just on my mind, and someone else goes off and cleans up the audio, and yeah, it's a nice synchronicity that I think exists because we're here trying to cobble together our own little tribe. Maybe not a safe place, there's certainly lots of individuals in this grouping, and that means that we are to take Petra, who I spoke with recently, we're all contrarian, and that is true. But that we can give each other a nod and say, let's try to be a sounding board and help each other out. It's just because someone can quote to you Ephesians 6:10 doesn't mean that they're a Christian. There is a lot of corruption in the world, and there is a lot of fakery. And I just wanted to mention before I sign off that we're moving at quite a pace, and the reading was dense the last couple of weeks. I don't know if you were able to read or listen to the audio of chapter 12, but we embark upon chapter 13 now, and we'll be covering that in the Telegram group on the 28th of this month. That is the disruption of Europe, 1937 to 1939. It's about 50 pages. So that's what's coming up in the next couple of weeks. And I hope that you are having good weather where you are, and that life is treating you kindly, and if not, that you are hanging in there. And take care. Thanks.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Monday. It is the 30th of August in the year 2004. Our spiritual message this evening is from Ephesians 6, beginning with verse 10. And Alan, I was going to ask you when I do this, if you would share with me and with our listeners what this means to you. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not. This is Paul, by the way, saying this, folks, you know that. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Alan Watt, thanks for being with us again tonight.
Yes, it's a pleasure, yeah.
Well, you sound nice and louder.
I do, Lee.
Oh, yeah, I like that. What does that passage there, does it say to you, Alan, or how do you hear that?
Yeah, but that's Ephesians message brings in different hierarchies of powers. One is a sort of spiritual power. The other one is a temporal power. The rulers in the darkness, basically.
Yeah, the rulers of the darkness of this world.
So it's the rulers. Darkness, in that sense, always meant in secrecy. That's what it meant. And if you go into the age-old religion that's behind all religions, that encompasses the spiritual side of their reincarnation, as they believe, into the physical body. So they become the temporal rulers of the world. And as I say, as above, so below, in the hermetic meaning of it in Masonry, it means bringing in the high spirit of their own ancestors into the perfected physical spirit of a genetic line.
And do you,
so that's what it's all about, really.
And do you think that Paul was saying that, or if Paul said this, but it's attributed to Paul in one of his letters?
Yeah.
If he was saying that, is it saying he knew what was happening? He knew what, he understood what you just said?
I think he would have to be, because...
He was a Pharisee.
He was a Pharisee. He'd been trained in the rabbinical schools.
Uh-huh.
And... All rabbis know that reincarnation has been a main theme of Judaism from then up until the present day.
Well, you know, I didn't, from a lot of the stuff I've read, that there's really, they don't talk about an afterlife, at least to the lower classes, maybe, their lesser brethren, that they don't really have much part of their religious whatever with an afterlife.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the lower orders are allowed to basically believe in whatever they wish to believe in. The higher orders, of course, have their own separate religion. Albert Pike said every religion has an exoteric and an esoteric group, basically.
And
Judaism was no different.
For our listeners, just in case somebody doesn't differentiate esoteric meaning and inner secret meat, or coded almost, I guess, isn't it, Alan?
It's initiated through, the higher degrees.
And exoteric being the outward ostensible meaning for the profane.
For the masses, yeah.
For the masses.
That's why the masses, or the Catholic Mass, is for the mass.
Is that what that means?
Yeah, Eusebius was one of the popes, and he wrote about it. He said when the doors are closed, after the masses have gone, we priests have our own secret religion.
There was a pope named Eusebius?
Yeah.
There was a historian in Constantine's time named Eusebius, too.
But no, it was written about, and Albert Pike, once again, he mentions him, too. So this has been written about and well understood all down through the ages. It's interesting that everyone is basically worshipping what they think is that the God that rules the world. But the God that rules the world is supposed to be Lucifer or Satan. Those who follow Satan or Satan's ways become the leaders of the world system. And that is the religion behind all of this. The Creator himself, even according to Judaism, created everything and basically sort of left some to go somewhere else. And they say in their own writings that no one can understand the mind of the Creator, and that ultimately the Creator himself would not return until the great work was completed.
And they're speaking about Lucifer, are they?
So who is running this world? Who is ruling this world in the meantime? Who is it that everyone's praying to?
Well, but when they say the Creator will return when the great work is done,
yeah,
they're referring to Lucifer?
They're referring to their own role, because some rabbis have published books about the role of Judaism, and they tell you in comparative religion studies that Judaism is an active religion working towards an end. And when you look at what the end is, they say it's to bring about the international brotherhood of man. That's primarily, and when that's completed, there will be no more function for Judaism and stuff. And if you ask Masons what their role is as Masons, they tell you it's to bring about the international brotherhood of man. If you ask the Sikhs of India, who are also a Masonically created group, what their function is to bring about the international brotherhood of man. So,
well, that's just one little cozy little club, isn't it, Alan?
Well, communism was the same under the guise of communism. Theosophy is exactly the same. And that book I mentioned to you that you couldn't find,
yeah,
is called Things to Come.
Yeah.
That was published by the Luther Trust, which used to be the Lucifer Trust, New York. And it was by Foster Bailey, in fact.
Foster Bailey. Thank you. Well, that's why I couldn't find it.
And it was 1974 that was published.
And that's called Things to Come.
And it has the whole agenda here, including the need to give up private property, which Albert Pike, the Pope of Freemasonry, also said. And everyone must be born to fulfill a duty to the world state. It's all in there. And that the hierarchy, which they call the hidden hierarchy, started to emerge into public view in about 1970s.
1970s?
Uh-huh. 70? So these are the bloodlines who, for the first time, have actually come into politics. And yet these are still the lesser of the hierarchy. And towards the time we're living in now, they claim that the real hierarchy, the top ones, will start to emerge for world government. So it's all underway, you know.
This Foster Bailey, you said that's Alice Bailey's brother?
I believe it was.
Well, wasn't he quite a bit older?
Well, you got to remember that this is a big family.
Okay.
They also have connections with British royalty, same as Annie Besant. Annie Besant, they're all ABs, you'll notice, you know.
Alice Bailey, Annie Besant.
Yeah. Again, that's part of their coding system.
And what does AB mean?
Well, AB is an altered being. Abraham, he was an altered one too.
What does that mean, Alan?
It means that they're of a bloodline that has highly selected their mates, or had them selected for them all down through the ages. And so they're inbred to an extent because they do believe in the perfect reincarnation of the perfect spirit as above into the perfectly genetically interbred families as below here on earth. And that's what they call the pure Aryan race. So it's interesting that this is being pushed the big time by the UN. You'll find all the same terminology, the global village, all this kind of thing in that particular book.
The Lucis Trust is, I think, headquartered in the UN complex.
Yeah, I know it certainly was.
UN Plaza or something like that.
And they have a temple inside the UN.
Oh, yes.
The meditation room.
Yes.
Yeah, with a green stone. And interesting enough, the Rockefeller, David Rockefeller, uses a lot of the theosophical terminology in his speeches. So I'm sure he's a member.
And did you know that, I think this was a couple years ago, it came out in a newspaper article that an Israeli firm had bought the UN Plaza?
I didn't hear that.
Yep, mm-hmm. A couple years ago.
Yeah.
And I checked it out because I thought, gee, they're really getting blatant. There's a couple of things that when we were talking about Paul, mentioning that he was a Pharisee, and I think I've mentioned this to our listeners, but I don't know if I had, that there are indications that he actually was beyond just a Pharisee, but that he was a member of the Sanhedrin, because a listener from Canada called me one time and was reading to me from Jewish information, and it said that it was the custom that if somebody was going to be stoned, the person who initiated the stoning had to throw his cloak at the feet of a member of the Sanhedrin. And in the biblical story, when they were getting ready to stone Stephen, the cloak was thrown at Paul's feet. And, you know, that is indicative that that he was very probably a member of the Sanhedrin.
Yeah.
And the Pharisees, I've got a thing that it's a statement that's in the book, a quote, where they, the Pharisees themselves had stated that if the lower classes, the lesser brethren, ever discovered that Jehovah was a phantom god, that they would lose all of their control and their whole plan would be down the tubes.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't surprise me because it is an active religion, as I say, working towards a definite agenda.
Uh-huh.
And I think it was Prime Minister Begin gave a speech on the role of Israel he said that the world court would eventually be moved to Israel, and that would be its prime function, was to be the court of mankind. So some of them have been pretty honest about what they see as their goal.
Yes, and probably because they know that very, very few people will ever pay attention to what they say.
Yeah, or they'll think, well, you know, people are very odd that way. If they can actually hear something important being said in speeches, but dismiss it or and think the person, you know, has his own opinion type of thing. But when these guys get up and make these speeches, this is not their opinion. This is the agenda.
Their agenda.
Mm-hmm. So it's well documented, really, in all the different speeches when you go through them. And even the first Prime Minister of Israel gave the same speech that Begin later gave about the World Court being moved there. So it's, you know, we couldn't surprise us that they would want Nazis to go there.
You know what comes to my mind when we talk about this plan, the fact that there are so many, in fact, it has been said that there are 40 million Judeo-Christians today, or fundamentalists, they're calling themselves Christian Zionists, who are totally, absolutely, from their heart, pushing and supporting Israel, no matter what. Israel forever. Israel, we love you. You know, they doubt this, that they're saying.
Yeah.
And there's so many more of them than actually there are of the Jews. And it occurs to me that collective thought, because the power of the spoken word and the power of our thoughts, when they can get millions of people believing that deeply and that intensely, they're helping to bring it into the physical, Alan.
They are. As I say, it's a much older religion than people realize, because this was taught to all the Greek aristocracy when they all studied. They were all sent to study in Egypt. And Pythagoras came back with that philosophy and the goal of the great work. And, of course, he started up, like they all did, their own little schools. And these schools all led the youth to revolution. So this would be done through revolution, down through the ages, and it's still going on.
I'm sorry, Alan.
Yeah?
We had a call come in, and I turned the mic down so I wouldn't interrupt what you were saying. Alan and I spoke about this, folks. Our caller wanted to know if you were taking questions. And Alan asked if you have questions, if you would just make a note of them. And then we will have an evening where we will take your calls and Alan will take your questions. And so I missed what you said, Alan.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is this is a much older religion than what people think. That it pre-existed Judaism. It ran through Babylon and Egypt. All the Greek aristocrats and philosophers studied in Egypt and then were sent out after their initiation to start up schools for youth. And each school that they set up became a place of admission, a monastery, you might say. And what they were taught was how to go out into the world and create revolution. So Egypt was teaching revolution to these initiates, like Pythagoras, for instance.
When you say revolutions, are you talking like the American Revolution, the Russian Revolution, all the revolutions of the
all
world.
All the revolutions, yeah.
And the Jews, of course, the elders of the Jews, say we are behind all revolutions.
Well, maybe they claim that, but
yeah.
I think that's a bit
bold. But see, this is why it's so confusing, the word Jew, because it makes you wonder the ones who are referred to as the elders. They call themselves Jews. Is that to cause confusion? And they created this religion called Judaism or Talmudism to combine the people and use them. I mean, they admit that it's been the lesser brethren that has been used, but along with Christians. Well, all the religions, actually.
All of them, yeah.
They've all been created to move this plan forward.
Yeah.
But my question is, would they be of that elite status that you're talking about and not of this, what we know as Jews today?
Well, again, according to Theosophy and Albert Pike of the Scottish Rite of Masonry, also called the Rite of Perfection, they both said that they, meaning going back to the days of Pythagoras, had been behind at the creation of all major religions and revolution.
It would be that international priesthood you told us about?
That's right. I mean, Adam Weishaupt, when he did not create the Illuminati. He was only one branch in his lifetime. And they got exposed, basically. And Weishaupt himself said that we must never go into lodges under a real name. So that they adopted many different front names for their actual religion. Some of them in Germany were called the Bienen Order.
The what?
The Order of the Bees.
Bees, the Bee Order?
Yep, and that's why they had the beehive as their symbol. And you'll see George Washington, remember, 1776 is no coincidence for Weishaupt or all Washington. And Washington has the beehive down in the corner of his famous painting. So, he certainly said that he knew the Illuminati were in America, and I'm sure he definitely did know. But, these guys have been behind all revolutions down through history. Napoleon Bonaparte, had a cloak made, covered with golden bees that, he took from a tomb in Egypt. You have the Mormons, another, Masonic, the created group. And of course they have on their flag there in Utah the beehive. So the beehive is very important to them. And you go all the way back to Plato, and he said that we shall create the major cities, which are artificial creations, to change the world, and these cities will be our beehives. So this goes on and on and on through the ages.
That's what it reminds you, that's what a city reminds you of too, isn't it?
It's artificial.
Yes.
You see, there's either the natural system that was created here, or you have the artificial system. The natural system remains pretty static for thousands or millions of generations.
And what was the natural?
It was living with the nature as it was made or given to us. The artificial system is alteration through science for science's sake. Stage by stage to an ultimate goal where everything will be reordered. And in Masonry, they say that their job is to create that or perfect that which was left imperfect. And by that, they mean everything in the world, including basic man himself.
And that's why they want to do rural cleansing and get the people in the rural areas into their artificial cities.
Yeah, the human habitat areas of the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's what they are.
But that's so that they can control. You know, that was in the Old Testament there in the story of Joseph. Mm-hmm. After, you know, the people, they had no money because he created the depression.
Yeah.
And then they sold themselves and their children into slavery for the food that they had grown. And then it said that Joseph gathered up all the people from the country and brought them into the city. Mm-hmm. It's right there.
Yeah.
Right there. We have to take a very short break here, and we'll be back right after it. Folks, stay with us. We bring this to you for your further awareness, and I hate to use this word, but enlightenment. It is a real word, I think, isn't it, Alan?
Yeah, I was just going to talk about that.
Right, okay, go ahead.
Well, in this particular book, Things to Come by the Theosophy Society, it says here on page 27, there's an international group of people trained in meditation who meet at the appointed time and place in three centers representing or associated with the three main spiritual focal points in the human family. There are five such points, as this esoteric teaching has told us. The three most active now are New York, London, and Geneva, affecting the American continent, Britain, and the Commonwealth, and Europe, including Russia. At each of these three centers, or triangles, these groups meet and follow meditative ritual on world goodwill. Now, they explain world goodwill as forcing their will onto the public, who then basically copy these ideas that come into their head towards the divine plan and become international and so on. If the purpose is to increase the flow of goodwill, this is called a form. They talk about creating a form of energy and actually pushing it on or into this triangle of humanity who then carry out their wishes. And they say that the people who attend the three main triangles are called the hierarchy, the hidden hierarchy. But later on in the book on 31, page 31, it says, maintaining an unimpeded relationship with the hierarchy and the Christ, and they have a different definition of the Christ, of course, we consciously extend the Christ.
Oh, the Christ, okay.
Yeah, we consciously extend the alignment and identification outward into humanity to include all points of light. Remember George Bush Sr. said 1,000 points of light?
Yes.
In the human family where the energy of goodwill is active. Now, these NGO groups that have been created by the big philanthropic organizations, like the Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, Carnegie, and so on, sponsor and actually start up these NGOs, each working towards complete internationalism with a new way of living for everyone. And they are called points of light.
1,000 points of light. And when they say the Christ, what do they mean?
The Christ is to be the ultimate ruler whose word is law, the king of the world. A king of the world who uses logic and science.
Okay, so they're not talking on a spiritual nature here.
Well, they claim their Christ will be of their spirit, you might say. But they're not talking about the one that people expect from a Christian point of view.
And that's why it's all so confusing.
Yes, uh-huh.
Well, when they say white, we should think black, shouldn't we?
Yes, correct.
And when they say light, we should think darkness, because everything they do is an absolute mirror reflection of what is spiritually so.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like a negative.
That's right. Yep. They did also publish a book called The Reappearance of the Christ, and that also goes into their idea of what they mean by a Christ, you know.
And, okay, because I'm going to ask it again, I guess. I was thinking as you were reading that they are using the creative energy, which is subjective, is that it, or objective, it's neutral, in other words.
It's an active energy.
Yes, and it can be used for good, mm-hmm. and it can be used for evil.
Yeah. Again, going all the way back to Plato, who was a member of this mystery religion, and who was initiated into the high degrees in I think three main centers in ancient times, 2,500 years ago. He was initiated into the high degrees of a few temples in Egypt, and then he went on to India, and then he went somewhere else after that, three main centers. And he talks about the creation of energy forms. And that's the usual term that's used, that forms, that every thought can create a form.
Yeah.
And as an experienced mind uses certain techniques, they can create a form which will travel to its destination and literally impart its knowledge or its program, you might say, into a targeted recipient. So this is very, very real stuff to them.
Okay, and on the very opposite side of that,
mm-hmm.
it's the same thing as if we send a prayer of love or protection to somebody.
Yeah.
That thought form goes and actually literally can protect.
Yeah, that's right. So this has been used for thousands of years. And this mystery sect, you might call it, that's behind all the different sects, have been literally building humanity. That's what masonry means. Freemasonry is building society stage by stage as you would build a temple. And as you, if you notice in the old cathedrals in Europe, as they would often build a structure near the base of the temple, like scaffolding, once had completed its job, they would take that structure away. So once a previous program has completed its function, it's then destroyed, and they build again on top of the new. And, of course, in theosophy, which is probably one of the most open fronts of Freemasonry, they tell you that their job is to build society towards this tremendous future they have planned for us. And all of the higher members we see on TV, the politicians, use this particular terminology of theosophy in nearly all of their speeches. So they are builders, the master builders, as they claim. But they want a world where science is merged with spirit, as they put it. And eventually they plan to rebuild mankind himself, or maybe itself, because I don't think in the future for the masses there'll be any real male or female to come out with the hermaphroditic worker to serve the hierarchy. There will be a hierarchy in the so-called classless world, strangely enough, you see. And I think probably the best reward a person in the future will get will be the right to have themselves cloned rather than have offspring.
The right to have themselves cloned?
Yep, rather than have offspring. Yep. That's what the reward will be for serving the world masters.
I've had a question in my mind, and I don't know that you can answer it, but you can at least tell me what your thoughts are on it. Let's start from the beginning. Create sun. They can not create anything. They can only use the stuff of creation.
Yeah, the material presence.
Yes. Okay. Now, if I have read that every cell has that spark of the creator within it. Mm-hmm. Like every cell is in a sense a universe of its own.
Yeah.
And I've wondered if an individual is cloned, does that clone contain that same life energy of creation?
It would have the same energy, but it would not have the same exact personality unless they found a way to
implant a soul.
Implant a soul. They're already working towards the transference of human memory into computers.
Oh.
It's a partway stage of it, from transferring that memory into a duplicate, a clone. So they are working hard on that. And whenever they tell us they're working on something, I've always found that they've done it long ago.
Yeah.
So
false memories. In other words, just give us memories. Well, like you and I were talking about this once, and I thought about the movie that, what's his name, Schwarzenegger played in. I think it was called Replay. And it was in a future time. And he wanted to go on a vacation. So he went to some office someplace, sat in a chair, they put electrodes to his head, and he took a trip.
Yeah, that's Total Recall, I think.
Was it Total Recall? Yes.
Yeah.
Well, is that kind of what you're talking about?
That's a way of doing it. However, this religion that's been here forever with the aristocracies inbreeding down through the ages, and all countries with their own religion, where they claim that their own predecessors in the family trees can be reincarnated into future, the same future family trees, if they keep their bloodline pure.
Uh-huh.
Now, when you go back to their origin, where they claim that they did not belong to this planet, it starts to make sense. They claim that they were cast out of wherever they came from and imprisoned here, basically. But they still retained more powers than the natives on this planet. And through their own will, being pure energy and light, through their own will, they literally manipulated matter by their mental powers alone,
yeah,
and created the first perfect human bodies that they could inhabit as perfect spirits. And so we're talking about, some would say demons, some would say fallen angels, but we're talking about this particular group, that are still present, or their offspring are still present today, in their own plane, and hence there's the reason for their secrecy, and hence also the reason for their tremendous inbreeding and genealogical searches before they can get married and so on. They have the saying in Masonry, as above, so below. So what they mean...
That's in the Bible too.
That's right. And so what they mean is the perfect spirit can come into the perfect bodies from the same family trees. All going all the way back to these first humans or humanoid creations that they created for themselves by their own willpower. So the difference being that the rest of the people here were native to the planet and are therefore commoners. We breed indiscriminately. Most people don't even know who their great-grandfather was or care. And we breed in common. But these guys kept their genealogical lines pure. Going all the way back to the end of one of the ages, supposedly it was the flood. The flood is registered in the same mystery of religions in three main places. One was Mount Parnassus in Greece, and the elite of Greece went into the mountain there and supposedly survived the flood. We have Mount Ararat, which is riddled with tunnels. And there was another one, they think, in the Himalayas, where the northern Brahmins claim that they survived the flood as well. Now, they all had one thing in common, and that is, again, perfect breeding down to their genealogies. The reason Noah was supposedly picked was for one reason alone, not because he was good or any different from anyone else, but because he was perfect in his generation, in his inbreeding. That was the only reason he survived. So we're looking at a eugenics program, basically.
Yeah.
And of course, aristocracy is nothing but a eugenics program. We worship kings and queens today because of their genealogical inbreeding.
And you had said this before, and it had never occurred to me until you said it, that those rulers of those countries weren't even of the same nationality.
That's right.
And then I remembered, you know, Catherine the Great, she was from Germany.
Yeah.
Of Russia. But they were all inbred anyway.
Uh-huh. And when you go
but
back...
But she wasn't a Russian.
Yeah. I mean, the present British royal family have three main houses, all related though, of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha.
Of what?
The proper name is Saxe-Coburg-Gotha.
Gotha, G-O-E-T?
G-O-T-H-A, I think.
Okay, G-O-T-H-A, okay.
And then, of course, they're related to that, the old Habsburgs and so on and so on. They're all interrelated. Why are they worshipped any differently from anyone else? It's purely because of their bloodlines that they're there and being worshipped. So people are actually worshipping a eugenics program. When you think about it.
Well, yes, and I am so sorry because I know that I do this with all these questions. I just want to say this. There's probably 18 questions floating through my mind right now. Mm-hmm. And one of the one that is persisting when you talk about what, you know, their take on this or their whatever, their story, mm-hmm. they were the quote, fallen angels or whatever that were cast out,
yeah.
and the high spiritual beings, and they made, with their minds, the perfect human body for them to reside in.
Mm-hmm.
What about the rest of us, Alan?
Well, the rest of us consist of the original species, according
to... But wait a minute, there had to be a start someplace. What is the original species?
Yep. Well, they claim, again, that this creator that created everything and everything on these places, and whom they rebelled against, who created mankind, or humankind. And they claim, of course, we had very low intellect and so on. And I've noticed that in all Masonic writings and scientific writings on anthropology and anthropological studies, and in economic studies, they all complain about stagnant civilization, like tribal civilizations, American Indians, the Africans, and so on, people who lived the same way as their ancestors did and seemed to have no drive to go any further, meaning improvement. And so anything that was natural is anathema and an utter enemy to those who are working towards this great work of scientific recreation.
And they slaughter children without blinking an eye.
Absolutely.
And when the American Indian or whatever, what they call them, Native Americans now,
uh-huh.
whenever they got an animal, killed an animal for their food, they
yeah.
thanked the soul of that animal
mm-hmm.
for giving them the nourishment.
Yeah.
So that, to me, is so much closer to what is real, Alan.
Yeah.
It's so much closer to what is real.
And you see, the allegories and the metaphors of Eden, which these guys gave us, by the way, have tremendous truth in them. When you can either be in paradise and accept it as it is, or if you leave paradise, you're on a one-way road of alteration, to eventually obliteration of all that was.
You're talking about like the artificial cities and the artificial everything.
Yeah, and they are altering humankind now. All the sexual liberation and so on were definitely planned and pushed from the top. Nothing ever comes from the grassroots and succeeds. Everything comes from the top down, and it changes that they want made. And, of course, our psyche is being changed all the time until you have gender bending and so on. And we are ready for the first clones or even hermaphroditic creations to be put in front of our faces. And then there'll be a whole new bunch of laws to do with that and their rights and so on. And the public are ready now because they have been... they've lost their cultures. They've been deculturalized.
Deculturalized.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned that our cultures have always been given to us.
Yeah.
And this was a long time ago mm-hmm. when you were on, and suddenly it occurred to me because
yeah.
of the bias, man in the biosphere.
Yeah.
They literally claim that every living thing on this planet is equal. In other words, the very lowest one-celled amoeba
Yeah.
is equal to the human being.
Well, even for that, you have to go into the pharaohs of Egypt. Now, a pharaoh, again, was a spiritual incarnation of one of these initial rebels who were put here. And he was also the physical descendant of that same lineage that they created.
And they weren't actually Egyptians, right?
Oh, no, they came into Egypt.
Right, exactly.
In fact, they had red and blonde hair and
right.
blue and green eyes. And
uh-huh.
they wore wigs. And they found them in the tombs.
Uh-huh. Every time you say something, you open up 1,000 questions.
Yeah.
You know, red hair, blue, green eyes. That is what people mostly refer to as the Nordic races or the Anglo-Saxon.
Yeah.
And that gets real confusing to me.
Uh-huh.
And we've only got about 5 minutes, so maybe...
We'll stick on the same subject. So,
yeah.
A pharaoh, and let's go to the biodiversity treaty, you'll see praises written for the pharaoh by the high priest. And pharaoh ruled everything. He owned and ruled everything
ah.
that flew above the earth, walked and crawled on the earth and lived underneath the earth. And to the Pharaoh, everything was his property, right down to the smallest insects.
And we are an organism,
uh-huh.
as it was stated in that book that I've got, Cogs in the Wheel.
Yeah.
Like in Russia, they said in the Soviet Union, mm-hmm. people aren't born, organisms are born,
yeah.
and we turn them into people. And what occurred to me, when you mentioned the culture, that they give us our culture,
yeah.
and then you go back to culturing organisms in a petri dish.
Yeah.
And then I just suddenly saw this whole planet, and all of us here are like, the planet is their huge petri dish.
Exactly.
And they're culturing us.
Yeah. Yeah, they give us their culture. Again, Plato in the Republic talks about this, that the public have never, they can't remember their original culture, and yet they'll fight and die to retain what they think is their own, never knowing that it was actually given to them as an upgrade on the last one. And it will also be destroyed as they demolish the old temple and build the new. That's what they mean by that. They are the
And
builders.
The old temple is the old body and the new is the new that
it's
they
the
make?
It's the old body, it's the old culture, it's
uh-huh.
the old system. And the new temple is the new structure, yeah.
And
all of that.
Genetically engineering the body.
Uh-huh.
We did talk about this on another broadcast.
Yeah.
Through the genetically modified food.
The food, the inoculation.
Yeah.
The releasing bacterium, nanotechnology. They can create viruses now which can act like little builders inside your body and alter any organ.
And it's almost like those viruses have a mind of their own or a thought process, isn't it?
They're programmed, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
They have a certain function. Uh-huh. Alan, will you come back with us tomorrow night?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, well, I got this down. I've written it down and I've circled it. Red hair, green, and blue eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I would like if you would... This is... It is very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And very fascinating. I hope for... We have listeners that I'm sure are listening that have... were tuning in. Although we were on 3.210 at the time,
huh.
and I heard from a listener, and he said that for the first time he can understand every word you're saying.
No, it really is.
Well, we're on 5070,
yeah.
and the reception is a whole lot better. And so it's almost like, so our longtime listeners are finally hearing you, the ones that didn't order the set of tapes that we made,
mm-hmm.
and our new listeners, folks, let me, you're going to get my address again in just a minute, so please keep your pen in your hand, but I want to give you Alan's, suit. Alan.
Yeah.
I don't even have my book here. We'll do it tomorrow night.
Sure, yeah.
Let's remember, to remind our listeners that there are two booklets that you've put together that can help them catch up to speed on a lot of stuff that we've already discussed.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being with us tonight. And we will be back tomorrow night with Alan Watt. And Alan, thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much.